Hello and welcome to this week's Inside Education, your weekly guide to education matters in Ireland and further afield, brought to you by me, Sean Delaney. Podcasts of previous programmes are available from seandelaney.com/podcasts. You can get in touch with me through Twitter at Inside Ed or by email to insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. My new book, Become the Primary Teacher Everyone Wants to Have, is available now online and in good bookshops locally. I'll be talking about it in more detail on a future programme. It's not every year that a new curriculum subject is added to the secondary school curriculum, but this year that is the case. The new subject is politics and society, and the idea of the subject is to develop students' ability to be reflective and active citizens, informed by the insights and skills of social and political science. It is a full leaving certificate subject with the same amount of class time, 180 hours, as all other subjects. Annette Honan has been working with the National Council for Curriculum and Assessment, the NCCA, for 14 years in curriculum development and has been working on politics and society for the last year. I met up with Annette to find out more about the school subject, politics and society. I began by asking Annette, where do you start when you're asked to develop a new curriculum subject?
Well, the first place is with extensive consultation, and increasingly that's the way that the NCCA does work. I think there was probably a time in the past where an education officer went off into a room and in splendid isolation, you know, did their own research and then devised draft curricula, which then went, you know, out for consultation. Now we tend to turn it around. So, for example, students particularly were the first group who were consulted in way back about 2006. There was extensive consultation with young people of this age around what they would be interested in, what are the issues of interest to them, the things that they're exercised about in relation to the world, society, issues, concerns that they would be interested in learning about. So that was really interesting and useful. And then the next step is to form...
So you said that happened in 2006.
Yes.
So that's quite a while ago.
Yes.
Because, I mean, I thought that the...
This has had a very long gestation.
So it wasn't just the initiative of Ruaidh Quinn, for example.
Oh, no. In fact, there's been a lobby for a subject at Leaving Cert in the area of politics since the early 2000s. And I have to acknowledge people like Kathleen Lynch, for example, who was very vocal. And also, there's a group called the Citizenship Education Network of teachers and academics and NGOs, indeed, such as Trocar, for example. And they were also very strongly advocating way back since the early 2000s that there needed to be a corresponding subject at Leaving Cert for citizenship education at junior cycle, in line with other European countries, indeed, it has to be said. So it took a long time even to get to a stage of consultation. In the NCCA, the way we work is through development groups. And those development groups are representative of all the partners in education. So there would be teachers involved in those, the unions, parents, academics, people who would have particular expertise in the area as well. So it goes through several drafts and then goes to the council of the NCCA, who sign off and approve of all the important documents. And then finally, in 2009, it went to the minister. And unfortunately, then we went into recession. So it sat and it sat and it sat until 2015, when, lo and behold, the government were looking at ideas around ways to commemorate 2016. And Jan O'Sullivan had the insight to say, wouldn't this be one wonderful way of marking 2016 by bringing in, or 1916, by bringing in a course that would be helping young people to think about politics and their role in Ireland and beyond, indeed. So it was wonderful and very fortuitous that the anniversary came about, because otherwise, who knows, it might still be sitting on a shelf in the department. So that's the story of how it came about.
And how did you get involved with it then initially, Annette?
I've just been involved in the last year in this particular programme, even though I've been working with the NCCA now for 14 years in curriculum development. Because it had been on a shelf, so to speak, there was a need then to look at it again afresh and see, well, is it still relevant? Are there changes needed? Let's put an implementation plan in place. What supports are going to be needed for teachers, resources and so on? So that's where I came in the last year. And I've been working in the area of finalising it in the sense of ensuring that it is entirely up to date now. And there were some small changes obviously needed, but very few. In fairness to those who were involved in writing it in the first instance, they did a great job. And more recently then, developing resources for teachers as well to support them in the classroom that are on the NCCA your website. So, because obviously with a new specification like this, there is no textbook and there probably won't be for a while. So teachers do need support, and that's the area I've been working in as well.
And did anyone else work with you over the last year?
People think the NCCA is a huge organisation and there's like hundreds of us in there. There actually aren't, and most of us are multitasking. So truthfully, no. Although, I mean, we all, like yourself, I'm sure, you work with your colleagues and you help each other out. But for the most part, an education officer would have responsibility for a subject area or several subject areas pretty much on their own.
So the consultation then really is what happened up to 2009?
Yes. No, there was no need to go back and completely rewrite or the specification then when the Minister announced that she wanted it to be implemented. That job had been done. So we were into the area then of looking towards supporting implementation, really. And we had a launch with the Minister down in Limerick in her home place in February.
The syllabus hasn't actually been piloted then in any school. It's going straight into full implementation from September.
Yes, it is starting on a small scale though, which was really interesting and very encouraging for us. A letter was sent out to schools inviting them to be part of the first phase of the rollout of this new subject. And over 100 schools applied for 40 places. And the reason for 40 is that's a manageable number for the PDST to work with and support through the professional development that they'll be offering. And it's also enough then to form a really good network of teachers who can then obviously be able to share their experience and scale it up then when it's offered to the wider cohort of schools.
It's just being offered to 40 schools now at this
yes,
time?
Yes.
And then it'll be offered to all schools from 2 years' time?
Yes. Now, obviously, it'll be up to the schools themselves to decide if they want to then offer to their students, if they have the capacity in terms of a teacher who's suitably qualified, if they've teachers interested in teaching it, and more importantly, students interested in taking it. So there's no point pretending that every school in Ireland is then going to take it up in 2018. But I would be hopeful that quite a number will, based on the number who wanted to participate even in the first phase of it. And it's not surprising. Like, it's a fantastic course. It really is wonderful. I'd love to be either a student myself in class or better still, a teacher teaching it. And I think it'll appeal to certain students and indeed certain teachers too, very much. The kind of student that love this is a student who likes to ask questions, who's interested in the world, who doesn't really want a right or wrong answer and to learn the teacher's notes off and go in and regurgitate them. So, and similarly, it'll suit the teacher who doesn't want to teach that way, who really wants to bring genuine democratic deliberation into the classroom and have students discussing and debating and looking at things from different perspectives and questioning and interrogating data and evidence and seeing, okay, does that really hold up? Does that stand up there? Why is this or not true? And what's the reasons for this? What are the root causes? What are the structures that are at play here that are causing this to happen in our world or not? So there's going to be a lot of that kind of interrogation going on in the classroom. And if teachers like that and are comfortable with it, they will just love this course. And similarly for students.
And if you could lead us in, Annette, into how the subject is structured, how is it organised?
It's organised around four strands. And the four strands are quite broad: power and decision making, active citizenship, human rights and responsibilities, and globalisation. So they're huge ideas, obviously, but the good thing about the entire course is that it always begins with the local and the young person's own personal experience. So, for example, now as teachers begin to teach this, probably the first thing they'll be doing is going in and asking the students, well, in our school, who has the power? Who decides the rules? Why are the rules? Are rules necessary anyway? So immediately you're into the question of politics is about power. It's about who makes the rules and to whose advantage. So in a subtle way, you're introducing students to some of the core concepts around politics. But you're doing it from the beginning in their own current experience and then moving out from there. And then through that kind of a discussion and debate and, okay, let's see who thinks we need loads of rules because basically people can't be trusted. And if we didn't have rules, everybody would be running around the school and going mad. To the perspective that some child might say, no, I don't think. I think we only actually need one rule. If we all just respected each other, that would be enough. Because everything flows from that. Say, oh, this is really interesting. Over here, we've somebody who's very Hobbesian. Thomas Hobbes believed that basically, you know, the human person needed to be controlled and needed a strong state. We've over in the other corner of the room, some of you seem to believe you're more like Locke. Or Rousseau, who believed that, you know, the human person is essentially good. So in the class, the students will be looking at their local situation, but then the teacher will be bringing all of these big thinkers into the classroom and exposing them to people who've thought about these things before, and some of the theorists like Kathleen Lynch, whose work on education and power obviously is very relevant, which is relevant to all this as well. So in a very gentle way, the students will be brought into a deep and rigorous process of thinking around these issues, as well as having the excitement and the energy of looking at the issues that are really real to them, like why do we have uniforms, would be quite a good example of the kind of discussion that could happen as well. And the students give all the reasons, but are they really sound and valid reasons? And what evidence or data is there to back that up? Do uniforms actually contribute to us all feeling more equal? And on a wider level in society, do they contribute to equality? Can we look at some data around this? Is there gender issues here around uniforms? Do uniforms inhibit sometimes girls' movements more than boys? You know, so there's all this kind of stuff can come up in the classroom that they love to talk about, but now they've been given a way of talking about it in a way that is actually forcing them to really interrogate their views and not just express opinions, but to have to look and see, is there a way I can actually back this up and find evidence that will provide data to support my views as well? So I think that's a really important kind of discipline that'll transfer across probably to all other subjects in a very positive manner as well.
And from what you said, it sounds as if the subject is going to be drawing on multiple disciplines as well, like philosophy, history. Yeah. What disciplines do you see it as being primarily based on?
Well, it's mainly drawing on politics and sociology. And you're right, philosophy and some of the great thinkers, indeed from Rousseau to Paulo Freire, you name it, are listed in the specification. And they're listed as prompts to the teacher, really, to help them to know who are the types of thinkers they could bring into the discussion and introduce the students to. But they're not exhaustive, because obviously there are others as well. So a teacher who would typically teach politics and society will be a teacher who most likely has in their primary degree or postgraduate some politics, sociology, maybe philosophy, anthropology, might have done a postgraduate degree in human rights or development studies. There's a whole range. So it would be important, though, because those kind of disciplines are the ones that are most pertinent to the course. And I think it'll be really important for school principals in particular to look very carefully at the kind of teacher that they assign to teach the course.
And training will be provided for the teachers?
Yes, absolutely. At the moment, the PDST have sole responsibility for supporting the teachers who are engaging in the first rollout of the new course. Down the road, some of the universities have expressed interest in offering teachers a course that might upskill them, for example, to be able to take this if they don't have, for example, politics or sociology in their degree, and they might have maybe had years of experience in teaching CSP and really enjoyed that, for example, but don't feel just quite ready to take this on or able.
And will there be any overlap with subjects like, say, history or like CSPE or any of those?
Civic, social and political education at junior cycle level. It's only 40 minutes a week, one class a week, 70 hours at junior cycle. And obviously it's going to increase now with the new wellbeing programmes that are being implemented in junior cycle. And that means that CSP, SPHE and PE will more than likely gain increased amount of space in the timetable. But even allowing for that, it's a huge leap from CSPE, one class a week, and you know the level of depth and rigour that's applied there to a Leaving Cert subject. So I think probably to compare it, the subjects it would have most affinity with would be history and maths, believe it or not. Because of the use of data and the kind of skills that would be required and being able to analyse and look at in a kind of a logical manner at statistics and data and so on, I think surprisingly, maths students might well like this too. If they like problem solving and they have good thinking skills, they would enjoy applying them then in this context as well.
So if we get down then to what the students will be doing, from what you've said, they'll obviously be analysing data, and I presume, will they be doing things like working on policies, for example, you know, a policy for education or in a policy for, you know, health promotion, something
like that? Absolutely. Like in the first instance where they're looking at, say, take power and decision making, they look at it in the local school, their own school context, they'll be looking at how are school policies developed and who's involved and who has a say, and perhaps even looking at some of those policies and interrogating them, possibly even wanting them to look at how they can have a greater say in the development of those policies. And on a wider level then, when they look out beyond their own school context, they'll be looking at how policies are developed at a national level, international level, and taking particular policies, whether it's in relation to young people, and most specifically and quite frequently within this specification, where they're asked to look at a human right or a policy, it's usually in relation to something that's relevant to their own lives. And then they will be expected to interrogate that. Say we take as an example, if they would look at the ways in which Ireland has implemented the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child, and they'd look at what policies are either contributing to that positively or negatively, how we're faring up internationally, and what could be done to improve it. And then based on that, they could take action, and they could well get involved in lobbying or joining an existing campaign or forming their own campaign. So at the heart of this is not just learning about for the sake of it, but also learning how to be an active citizen and make meaningful change and contribute to that in a thoughtful manner, not act as activism for the sake of it, but also looking, well, what is the most effective way, and how can people contributing to making the world a better place, and how can we contribute to that as young people as well? So I'm becoming agents for change, which is fantastic. And that's why 20% of the final mark is going to be for students being involved in an action project and writing that up then and reporting on it. So that's quite significant, that it's 20% of the total mark.
And what might an action project look like?
Well, it's important, first of all, Sean, to know that as part of the ongoing teaching and learning in the Politics Society classroom, the hope would be that students would be involved in ongoing action and reflection. So that by the time they get to fifth year or early sixth year and they're thinking about this 20% component of their final assessment being an action project, it won't be their first time. They'll already have got into the practice of looking at issues and being involved in taking action on some of those issues, albeit in a small way. And then annually, the State Exams Commission will issue a set of titles, which will be the titles for the action projects, and the students choose one of those. They're asked to do them in a collaborative manner. And the reason for that is because the students are going to be assessed not just in what action they took, but how they also engaged in working with others. Because in the real world, that's how we bring about change. We rarely do it on our own. We need to be able to work together. We need to be able to manage ourselves, manage the whole dynamic of working together and collaborate. So they have to factor that into the whole process as well and learn those skills. And that means not just working sometimes with those within their own classroom, but even beyond as well. And then having chosen their topic, researched it, decided what they're going to do, they can then submit the report in it electronically, which is fantastic. Because at the moment, say, for example, if you take their 20% component for history, which is an extended essay, or their project in geography, they write those up still by hand. So in this way, because of being able to type them up and submit them electronically, they'll also be able to then submit some images and pictures. So, for example, if they've conducted a survey, they'll be able to have their data there. They'll be able to show themselves, say, this is me in the project when I was doing this, that or the other. So that would be quite, I think, useful for them and bring the projects more alive. So the types of project titles, they might be asked, for example, focusing on one aspect of the quality of life, be it health, employment, education, leisure, whatever, conduct a study on how socioeconomic factors affect the life chances of young people in Ireland. So they have to go out and they might pick, okay, leisure facilities in my area, for example. What are they like? What are they like at a local level? What are they like at a national level? Are they related to socioeconomic factors? Are they better if you live in one part of the city or another? And how do they affect people's life chances? What's the impact of this on young people if they do or don't have access to these facilities? So they've quite a bit of research to do there, even if they only pick one of those. And then they have to decide how they're going to use the findings to inform others and to inform an action. So what are we going to do about it? It's not just knowledge for knowledge's sake. It's knowledge so that it can inform us and take an action. Imagine that you're working on the UN Committee on the Rights of the Child and you have to produce a progress report highlighting the areas where the Irish state is doing well and where improvements are needed. Gather data that will provide evidence for both and decide how you're going to share the findings with the person who can influence change. So they have to decide. It could be that they're going to bring the minister with responsibility into the school and or go to him or her, they're going to have whatever it is at the end. The action is important, but it's the process leading up to that and the rigour with which they do their research and decide how to engage and who to engage with and how to be most impactful in their action as well. So in this sense, you can see how it's a huge leap from what students would typically do in CSBE, where they have to take action. But for the most part, it's like or going out and doing a bit of fundraising for her, or an awareness day in their school, and it's short and sharp. It's envisaged that these projects will take several weeks for the students to undertake, and they really have to show that they have engaged in them and in a meaningful way and reflected fully on them as well. So that's just to give you a flavour of the kinds of projects that they might be involved in.
And that's 20% of their assessment. So what's the remainder of their assessment then for this subject going to be?
Then they have a written exam, as in all of the other Leaving Cert subjects, and it's separated into three parts. So the first part will be quick answer questions from across the whole specification. And then the second part is where they're presented with data. It could be data from CSO figures, for example, of a local level, like from an Irish context. It could be from an international context, a piece of research, a summary of it, the key findings, how it was done, where it was conducted, and so on. But the students then have to look at that. They have to draw their own conclusions first. They have to interrogate it and say, is this a valid and a useful piece of data? How could this inform government policy? For example, how does this relate to other things I've learned in my course? So they'll have to make links from the data out to other knowledge that they've gained in the course. So it's an unseen piece of data or a number of pieces of data from which the students have to be able to draw their own conclusions and really to show that they can practice the skills of sociology, really, because that's what sociologists do all the time, isn't it? And the third part is an extended answers, where they're given a number of topics that they will write discursive answers, almost like essay type answers, on a whole range of topics as well. And for the ordinary level students, obviously, you know, they will be well scaffolded, so they'll be broken down into exactly what would be expected of them. Clearly, you know, less is expected in terms of even the length of answers that ordinary level students would provide as well. And there would be less of an expectation that the ordinary level student would be able to appeal to a range of data, for example, as evidence to back up their arguments. And they're not expected to have the same familiarity with the big thinkers either. So that's how the differentiation occurs then across ordinary level and higher level. But essentially, students are covering the same course.
It sounds even as if it could have some connection with economics. Was that...
Because quite a number of the big thinkers would correspond as well. Robert Nozick, and there are quite a range of other thinkers, who would be well known in economics. So if a teacher has taught economics, that could be quite helpful too as a stepping stone into politics and society.
And will they look at politics beyond Ireland? Will they look at, say, the European Union or other systems of government even?
Oh, absolutely. For example, you know, I've mentioned the local there because that's where that's their starting point, obviously. But even when it comes to looking at structures of representation and power and decision making, it starts with the school, then it looks at Ireland, then it looks at European structures and indeed beyond, and who are the main institutions who have power and so on. Similarly, in relation to human rights, it starts by looking at human rights and responsibilities in Ireland and then moves to looking at human rights and responsibilities in Europe and the wider world. And obviously the topic then of strand four, which is globalisation, that's a huge topic in relation to looking at areas of like sustainability, the clash of cultures at the moment that we're seeing, and looking at issues around all of that. So there's great scope for looking at wider world issues, but always starting from the perspective of what's happening in the student's own experience and the familiar, moving from the familiar to the unfamiliar, or less familiar.
And I think the students will have a good excuse to read the newspapers as part of their study.
Yes, but in a much more critical manner. And even that's, I'm glad you've mentioned that, because the media and how the media functions and has power in society is also one of the key topics within the course. And looking at who has control of the media and ownership of the media and who tells the stories. And even though now students might think that it's a much more democratic system, in that anybody can be a journalist almost, because you can upload a story from anywhere in the world at any time and upload a photo, in actual fact, they will discover by looking at some of the data that less people have access, in fact, to news than they might imagine. And it's also still continues to be concentrated in the hands of a few, those who are actually making the stories. Whereas students might have the perception, oh, you know, this is all very democratic now. And there's probably less rigor around the way in which news stories are being generated as well, because they want to get them out so fast. So they learn to kind of interrogate the news, I think, much more critically as well, which is no bad thing, is it?
Absolutely. And apart from the benefits of this subject for for citizens and for, you know, it's something that I think all of us would have benefited from. But are there any particular kind of maybe career directions or any, you know, particular follow through that you could see that would be particularly suited for students who would have an interest in this subject?
Well, because of the thinking skills that students will acquire, I think it will benefit them no matter where they go. If they go into the business world, for example. But most directly, you can see students obviously using this as a stepping stone to go on to study politics and sociology, obviously, anthropology, law, media studies, journalism, teaching. Needless to say, I should mention that, because now, formerly, I think when students came out with degrees in sociology and politics, they didn't quite know what to do with them. And if they were interested in teaching, it was hard to find a fit. So there's huge scope, really, from a career point of view as to where you might go with this, I think. And I think students will be well equipped to bring these thinking skills to, regardless, you know, what they choose to do in further education.
And at this stage, it's just being introduced at Leaving Cert level. Do you think it will ever become a Junior Cert subject?
Well, we have citizenship education there, and it's already growing in that it's going to be evolving now from being a 70-hour course. Most schools with a new junior cycle will be looking at providing more space for CSPE and other wellbeing-related learning. And there's an NCCA short course that's been developed, which is 100 hours. So that will allow, you know, significantly more time as well. So in a way, I think that's probably going to be the stepping stone up then for politics and society at Leaving Cert. Who knows? Maybe there will be an impetus for a full subject at junior cycle level as well.
What is your own background, Annette, in education?
I began my life as a teacher of religion. I studied theology in Trinity with Irish, and then, but mainly was interested, I have to say, in theology and in religious education. Mainly interested in religious education because I believed in the transformative power of education. And I saw religious education, if it is meaningful in the world today, it has to be about bringing about social justice. So that was always my passion. My passion for education, for social justice, was given great scope in as a religious education teacher, especially at a time when there was no exam subject. So I was able to develop and devise all kinds of courses in that whole area.
And the course that Annette Honan is currently leading on behalf of the National Council for Curriculum and Assessment is the new Leaving Cert subject, Politics and Society. That brings today's Inside Education to a close. Thanks to my guest, Annette Honan, for her time. If you'd like to feature an idea or an event on a future programme, you can write to insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. You can listen to hundreds of podcasts of previous programmes on insideed.com. But until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.